let's get going. Hey, welcome tonight to Cache Valley Transit District Board Meeting. We are going to begin with a Pledge of Allegiance by Sean Bush. And everybody else joining in.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, thank you. The consent agenda is before you, which includes the approval of the agenda, the approval of the minutes, and the next meeting. And I do have one modification I need to make. Under public comments, I'd like to add a building update by Dave Purdy. So with that modification, do I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved. Second.
And seconded. Day one. Gregory two. All in favor?
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Okay, great, thank you. Any public comments that we are waiting on? I don't hear any. Let's move to the next part. Dave, would you walk us through our building update, pricing update,
yeah, it's on, we'll put it on the screen.
Oh, very good. Cool. Thank you. We have reached one of those wonderful milestones in construction process where you can actually say we are at the point where we can get a guaranteed maximum price at GMP for those who are into acronyms. So finally, yesterday, we got final numbers, so we know where we stand. And so on this summary sheet, the construction, design, equipment, et cetera, came in at $46,175,000, which is higher than we initially anticipated. And it's increased because of inflation and supply chain issues. But we now know where we are. We also realize that we are short on our funding because we didn't get the grant that we hoped that we would have gotten earlier this year. So, including the land, the total project cost is gonna be $56 million. The land's already been purchased, so I don't have to worry about that. Our funding sources, we have federal grants and local funds, and the land that's previously purchased, which gets us to $48 million. Which leaves us a shortfall of $7,994,000. And so, as we have looked at options of being able to fund that shortfall, we have been working with our local legislators, Senator Chris Wilson and Representative Dan Johnson, on going to the legislature and asking for a one-time funding allocation and appropriation of $8 million, which would cover what we needed to do. If that doesn't happen, we also have some fallback plans that we can do that will get us where we need to do the whole project. And just so you know and understand what they are, when we receive grants from the federal government, some are not designated as capital or operating, and the grantee, which is the entity, gets to choose whether or not to use them for capital or operating. The staff has come up with $6 million of what initially we thought were going to be capital grant or operating grants that we can switch to capital that will shorten or reduce the shortfall, as well as the matching funds on the grants. And then we have in our fund balance, based on the staff's recommendation, we have $500,000 that we can take from the existing fund balance to help fund the project. So that gets us to the numbers that we need to in order to be able to move forward with the project. With that said, are there any questions? Actually, Todd, you're probably better able to address that question.
Call it Curtis.
Excuse me.
You look there.
Yeah, I know.
I knew where you were going.
He's cross-eyed.
I am. I'm looking out of both eyes.
It definitely doesn't help our position. It definitely it makes it to where we'll have to delay certain projects that we may have coming up in the future. But it is a plan in which we can operate. We won't be in financial jeopardy. But we would rather be able to have the additional flexibility that these $6 million in operating grants give us as we try to implement new programs, as we try to even look at expanding what microtransit is. It just delays a lot of those types of ideas that we'd like to be able to keep being able to bring to the board.
Right. So essentially pushes
them indefinitely, correct?
It's gonna put a delay on them for a few years at least, yeah. As we try to figure out.
But it does not hinder our overall operating.
Does not hinder the ability to operate what we have planned for next year, including the microtransit, would not be hindered by this.
And if we have a downturn in sales tax revenue or something like that?
Gives us a little bit less flexibility when it comes to that.
Less flexibility when it comes to
a downturn in the economy.
Yeah.
We may have to modify like the frequency of service on certain routes, the loop, how much microtransit we're able to offer. That frequency may go down as we adjust to what those sales tax dollars may mean.
And this $6 billion would offer a cushion in that over time.
It's
really $7.5 million.
Yeah, it would give us the cushion in case the sales tax goes down. It also gives us more ability to expand up it with the microtransit and push it out into other areas.
And
or frequency.
I have one more question, and that is there any chance, and I asked this before, of us doing any cuts to the project itself?
Yeah.
So
I will say we've put together a list for the state legislature as we've gone to them. We went through and went back through all of our records. We've actually cut out, it was right at $20 million,
yeah,
roughly speaking, that we have backed off of the overall project that we would have been trying to do as we've gone through these budget cuts. So we've identified a number of significant areas that been cut back.
But those are cuts that are already been made.
Those are already been made.
So they're gone. And so that just tells you the work that they went to in order to reduce the project to get it to where it is right now. So if there is a need, there are some things that could be pushed into the future that would be suboptimal but doable. So we are optimistic about getting the appropriation from the state legislature, but we also have a plan if we don't.
What's the guaranteed maximum there? Probably was like a 20% overage assumed or something. I mean, it's conservative by nature, right?
Yes. So there's close to $4 million in.
We dropped it down to $3 million.
$3 million in, it's called contingency, which means it's just there in case something comes up that we can't foresee.
Yeah. Always happens.
Always happens, unfortunately. And
so what about furnishings? Are they included in this price?
Yes, they are. No, and that's another thing that when it push comes to shove, we could do that. We could not get those furnishings. Again, that will be suboptimal, but doable.
This is strictly projects and not to replace, like you're bringing the buses in any way, strictly projects that this would affect?
Yeah, there's no buses in this. This is just to build the building. all the furnishings into it.
So the microtransit buses are not included, just the service.
So they are not part of the $6 million.
So is the current transit center going to be go up for sale?
You mean the current base facility?
Yes.
So at the point that we complete this and move, then that is the plan right now, is that we would put that up for sale.
Which could also be an offset.
Correct.
So there has been some interest already expressed. We've kept that information close to the vest so that we can determine when the information becomes public or made available to potential buyers, which protects us.
What is the value of that? Do you know right now?
We don't. We haven't had an appraisal done sometime, so we don't.
Okay. Any other questions?
Probably more than $8 million, right?
Yeah, I would think.
Hey, so before we go down that path, if we talk about real estate transactions or future transactions, we probably do that in executive committee. I really don't want it on public record.
Yeah. So in our next meeting, we'll come back and ask for a vote on what we propose to do. Okay? All right, thanks.
Since we won't know until March, right at the end of the legislative session on this, this will just sit here as a cushion,
yep,
waiting until March.
Yes. So remember, board's already approved $40 million. So those are funds that we can begin to spend and are already funded or designated funds. But there's lots we can do, and Big D is really anxious now that we finally got to the point where we have a guaranteed maximum price to be able to lock that in by contract. So they're really anxious to get those contracts signed, which will require some kind of financial transactions. Okay.
Do we have to approve the contract, or do we have the board?
You already authorized us to spend $40 million to work the project.
So, but that contract is more than that.
This portion that we're working with Big D is less than that.
Say that again?
So, do you want to address this, Chris?
Well, Jeannie's got a valid point. I mean, we didn't have time to get it on the agenda for a vote for tonight.
Correct.
And so we can't have a vote without, and so this was disseminated information. What we're looking for is there any indication that we'll back off of the contract, and if which case we'll just tell Big D we can't sign anything, we can't sign with any subs, which also runs the risk that prices could escalate, could change, contractors could back out, we could lose this pricing. And what we're focused on is we've already received authorization from the board for $40 million. So what we're proposing to do is we would start entering into the contract with Big D, knowing that there's $8 million that the board is subject to your board approval. We're looking for that in November, but they would be able to start signing key contracts and locking in the key prices so that we can get to where this guaranteed price maintains. But yes, if the board gives a general indication that they would rather us wait, we'll wait, and then we'll run the risk and see what happens with the contracts. If we kind of get a head nod here and it's kind of like, okay, we'll readdress it and come back and address the $8 million additional authorization that we're seeking come November, then we'll go that direction. We're just looking for kind of a general consensus idea, not a vote, just general. Are we heading in the right direction, or is this something we want to pull back on and wait for a full vote before we actually do anything with Big D?
Could also go south on them, too.
What's that?
I mean, the way the economy is rolling,
yep,
people may be hungrier, and it could,
okay,
be cheaper.
Okay.
We're not getting, we've already got pricing in.
Yep.
The ones that are in, they're not going to drop their price. And so I don't know that it'll move that much farther south, but it could.
If their costs go down, then they get to keep whatever the difference is.
I guess my concern is more generalized on our budget going forward. If the economy goes south, then a big portion of our budget goes south. And that makes it more difficult for us to operate without that type of a cushion that we have established. So that's my concern.
I will say, I was going to say this for when I did the budget presentation, but the governor's economic forecast just came out. The governor's Office of Planning and Budget came out with their economic forecast for 2023, which is when a lot of people forecast that a recession would hit, and they're still projecting for a 4.1% increase in sales tax in Utah. In taxable retail sales. Right now, the projections are all positive for Utah.
Does anybody want to have a discussion about pulling back the contract? We'll just open it up for a conversation.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. I appreciate walking us through that. Jeff, would you walk us through the Title VI program resolution, please?
You bet. I just had a new manager 10 minutes ago.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
So sorry if my mind is not off. I'd like to bring before the board for their consideration the approval of the Title VI program resolution. Policy committee met earlier this month. We went through it, and with unanimous vote, we approved it, and we bring it before you for your approval. Is there any questions about what that is?
Yes. What is the Title VI?
Title IX shows you that the Cache Valley Transit District will not discriminate anybody based upon their race, color, national origin, or anything, and that we follow the current policy from the Disability Act of 1964. And we have a motion to approve this, or?
So we accept the motion. Second move. And second. Thank you. Okay.
There's a second thing that we need to take into consideration.
Hang on a second, Paul. Yeah, all in favor of this motion for resolution 2201, consideration of Title VI program, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Did you
say
Title
VI?
Did you mean Title
IX? Title VI. Title VI is what I'm talking about.
Title IX is for the universities and their sports programs.
Well, and I'd accept one of that too, but
it's all education.
Title VI tonight.
Oh, I guess it is all education.
It is all education. My wife's a school board member, and it's a big part of what they have to deal with on an ongoing basis.
I didn't hear any opposed. I think the resolution passes. Jeff, would you take us to the consideration of the agency safety plan, please?
Yeah, so I believe it's every 3 years.
Every year
there's an agency safety plan that needs to be approved. And again, the policy committee met again this month, and we went through that policy, and we unanimously approved that it should be approved through the board. And just a safety plan. Have you been following with it every year for how many years?
This is fairly new. This is our second year.
It's the third year, but it's the second plan adoption. We got off because of COVID stuff. Okay.
All right. So there was just one minor change. I don't think it was that critical. What was that change?
I can't remember.
And maybe it was for that other resolution.
Yeah, the other resolution had a change. Yeah.
So, would you like to make a motion? Well, first of all, any questions about this?
Who's the CSO?
Yes.
I'm actually the CSO.
And any other questions?
Patrick should be the one.
That's the only thing we need to pass it. Okay. It's not a resolution.
All right. Forgive me. We've got a lot of moving parts going on here. I'd accept a motion for this. Okay, and a second, please.
A second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? I don't hear any. Okay, thank you.
This last legislative session, the legislature passed a law that we as a public entity, as a trans district, have to pass a resolution of how we deal with public meetings with regards to electronic attendance. And so we went through this with the policy committee again. There was a typo that we corrected, but essentially this dictates how you as a board participate in electronic meetings. And so what we've got here is what the committee had recommended. Just a couple things. It allows us to, allows you as a board to participate through electronic means, and it identifies current means, but it also talks about any future capabilities. Couple things that to highlight here. One, it is currently how it's written, is that if you have the capability of having a camera while participating electronically, you have to have that camera on. So that's something that for you to consider. It also, in compliance with the law, says that if the public wants to attend electronically, they are to notify us at least 3 days in advance that they want to participate. We publish this out. We always publish out the link, and so it really is a moot point here, but it just helps us comply with the law. With regards to calculating the quorum, essentially if you participate electronically, you count towards the quorum. That takes care of that. With regards to voting, what it talks to is that you can vote on any issue on the agenda as long as you can hear and participate in the full discussion associated with that. So essentially, if you were to come to the meeting halfway through a discussion item that was being considered for vote, you wouldn't be allowed to vote on that item, but you could vote on anything after that. Again, this one says that the district does not allow proxy voting. We're asked to address that. So again, that's something for you to consider. And I believe that's really all the key components around that. But we do need to pass something by the end of the year, so we don't have to pass this tonight, but by the end of the year, to be in compliance with the vote.
And Paul James, I move that we approve the electronic meeting resolution 22-02.
Okay, we have a motion, a second. Records, a second. All in favor of passing this resolution?
Aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Okay, the motion carries. Thank you.
And they count it.
Curtis, would you talk to us about budget, please? The proposed budget at this point.
I'd love to. So just a quick reminder so everybody kind of understands. Tonight we're just introducing the budget to the entire board. In the November meeting, we'll ask you to adopt the tentative budget, and which in compliance with state law, and then in the December meeting, we'll adopt the final budget. And at that same meeting, we have typically had the public hearing, so if any public wants to attend that meeting, they'd be able to come in and say what they need to say about the budget. So we won't be calling for a vote on this specific budget tonight. This is more for information. We have presented this whole budget to the audit/budget committee, took in their comments, and thank you to so many of you that came to the budget workshops that we had. We had really good turnout to those. And as a result of that, we decided to kind of change things up a little bit. We usually get a number of questions that come out of those budget workshops. It's really a lot of times hard for somebody to ask the question again inside of a budget meeting. So what we did is we summarized all the questions that came up during those budget workshops for you. And so that's the last two pages of my portion of the packet. Just so you can see what other people's questions are, we'll gladly revisit those either tonight or in the tentative budget whenever you would like to, if you would like to. Otherwise, just know that we address these to the budget meeting attendees that ask those questions. In your packet, there'll be a one page that shows a quick, dirty, easy summary of what our budget is. It does have an increase over what the previous year's budget was, and then a percentage. Behind that, there's explanation pages for any budget change where we're increasing more than $10,000 over the previous year's budget and 10%. So if there's some budget line item that had, we classify that as more of a significant change, we've added explanations for those as to what's happening. We're projecting currently just over $10 million, not quite $10.1 million in operating revenues. That's sales tax and the operating grants that we anticipate, well, that we have available now. As far as total operating expenses go, we're anticipating, I got off a call, 2023 budget, almost $11 million. It's $10.8 million is the revenues. Our operating expenses, including expanding out for microtransit, so this includes all the budget that we anticipate to operate microtransit, comes in right around $10.7 million. We're currently projecting about $121,000 dollar excess of revenues over expenditures. And then we'll have our capital items, the vast majority of which is money set aside to start the construction of the new facility. That number could change as we get this GMP in place and we can talk to them about their actual construction schedules. We'll firm up how much they think they're going to spend in that first year. Exciting part, they anticipate having the building enclosed before next winter so that they'll be working completely inside over the winter. That generates a decent amount of cost savings because they won't have to spend it heating up the concrete or having workers work outside. And so we're kind of excited about the construction path that we're going on. At the end of the day, we'll use up about $5.3 million through this point in time of our 12 point something million fund balance that we have. It's kind of where we anticipate being. Now that's things in a nutshell. Hopefully you've had a chance to look through the budget explanations. I do want to point out on the sales tax, as we mentioned previously, our sales tax projection was based off of our best guess at where we thought it was going to be for next year, and we put that in at 3% for the next year. Governor's office just barely came out on Monday with their sales tax projection, and it came out at the 4.2 increase in sales tax, taxable retail sales. So we may end up adjusting ours up to match theirs. We're still evaluating. One of the other key components is this budget has fuel budgeted at $4 per gallon. We thought it was trending down and it reversed its course here with some of the geopolitical stuff that's going on, especially the OPEC decision. So we're reevaluating that gas figure and looking at that going up to $4.50 on average, and that'll bring our budget expenses up. So we'll be analyzing those and we'll present that with the tenders budget. Those are some of the changes we know are happening for sure. I'd welcome any questions if you want me to dive in deeper to any aspect other than what's I'll cover the explanations, I'll cover questions, whatever you'd like to do.
Thank you.
I have a question. So, in here now, we have fuel budgeted at $3.50.
At $4.
$4. But you expect it to go to $4.50.
Yes.
And we need to budget for that increase. Will that come by boosting our sales tax revenue?
Well, that's what we're trying to look at is there any other cost savings that we can look at? Do we boost up the sales tax? And so we'll be spending the next couple weeks going through that and understanding what lines we think we can really adjust.
Well, you have two options. If we increase revenue or reduce expense.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yes, ma'am.
What does the 50 cent difference amount to, do you know?
Yeah, we know. it's right about $120,000.
Okay.
It hurts.
Yeah,
I guess that was why it came out on him, but yeah. I wish it was that simple, but yeah, I was like, really, you're going to wipe everything out just like that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Kurt, so you've got the list of questions here, revenue and expense questions. Do you have a list of answers to these?
We did take the time to type in all the answers. We definitely can go back through, and we recorded those sessions just for in case this would happen. We can go back through and type those in if the board would like us to. We were just trying this out the first time, and so it's really kind of a new deal. We'll really adapt to whatever the board would like to see.
I can see that. I think okay. It'd be appropriate if we could just email them out to the board members once we put the answers in.
Yeah.
Maybe the questions, so maybe we can just put the response in there so we can reference it, because frankly, some of those are my questions, and I can't remember what the answer was.
But it was really good at the time.
That was a very cogent question.
By the way, good job on these budget change explanations. It's nice to kind of see that in written form. It's worth it.
That's good. Because we did not focus on the Paperwork Reduction Act. So.
That's good. I appreciate it.
Any other questions, concerns, conversation? Thank you, Curtis.
No problem. So I just want to point out, Curtis mentioned this, but I want to put the date, because next month we meet a week earlier. So we're on the 16th, right? But we need a quorum to adopt the tentative budget per the state code. So I just want to make sure you all know it's the 16th next month. So, thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
So and the December meeting is also different.
Right.
It's what?
Yes.
It's like
the date for December.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Curtis.
Very important.
Do you have the
where are you going?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that's right. I do have one more item, huh? Okay, so as part of this budget, every year we go through this. Our health insurance primarily, it requires a renewal to be signed so that we can hold our open enrollment. And we can't push that off until final adoption of the budget. Our health insurance renewal came in at 4.2%. 4.2%. Over the previous year, we've been through this with the budget, with our audit budget committee. We've been through this in the budget workshops. What we'd like to do is have the board vote on allowing us to sign that contract, knowing that it's already planned within the budget that you see here, fully funded the same way. There'd be no changes to the employees. It maintains that stability. One of the things, and Patrick really challenged me on this. We gave you the budget priorities, and we'll resend those out. But the budget priorities, one of the very first ones, continue to invest in our employees. And so we think by holding the benefit package, we're accomplishing the board's budget goals of continuing to invest in our employees. And so we'd ask for approval to be able to sign the contract to continue that benefit package for the employees.
I would move that we go with the proposed health package as presented by Curtis.
Thanks, Dave. We have a motion. Do you have a second, please?
I'll second it.
Okay, Sean seconded it. Thank you. First and second. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Any opposed? I'm not hearing any. I'm curious. Thank you. Leanne, would you take us through the CMPO transit corridor study, please?
Sure. So the steering committee met a few weeks ago.
I didn't know I was presenting tonight.
Sorry, I'm going to actually show the previous slide, so.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, because we went through these slides and had a good discussion about this transit study.
So we've got a couple things that we're doing. The corridor study is the thing that we're doing right in this moment. We're starting our long-range plan update as well. But so what the purpose of this is, and this is in partnership with the CMPO. In fact, CMPO pays about 93%, almost 94% of this, and then we pay the difference, the remainder. And so what we're wanting to do is identify corridors. These are future corridors that we could deliver a higher level of transit. So right now what we see are buses running around. They're kind of what's known as a local fixed route, if you will, right? And so they're meant to provide coverage. But what we're trying to identify with these future corridors is something that we could provide a higher level of transit. It may start out as an express route where it has limited stops, but it drives along a set corridor. And here in the valley, most of those are going to be north-south. But it does it at a higher speed and at a higher frequency. So 15 minutes or less type of thing. But part of why we want to identify these future corridors is really to drive economic development. So you see down at Farmington Station, at the Front Runner, there's all that economic development that's happened. And that's because businesses know they're not going to move that rail, right? That rail is very expensive to move, and so they know that. With rubber tires, with buses, it's a little easier for us to say, oh, we don't like this street anymore, it's too slow. Patrick and I were talking about Main Street. It's hazardous, you know, we need to look at a different alternative. And so what we're trying to do with this is involving cities and the stakeholders, elected officials, the city planners, identify these corridors and say, look, we want you to commit to a certain land use planning. We want you to commit to helping transit have a higher priority on this corridor. And then we'll commit to staying on this corridor. And that, we hope, will really drive economic development on that corridor. And so that's what the purpose of this is. So here's the task that we have. We're kind of in the corridor number 5. We've kind of done through number 5, and actually we're partway through 6, and I'll talk about that. But so one of the things that we look at when we're trying to identify these corridors is potential activity centers. And really there's 3 tiers that we look at, and we've identified these as tier 1, tier 2, and tier 3. So tier 1 are really your high generating trip generators, right? So what we have in tier 1 is like high schools, a hospital, major employers, secondary schools. Because a lot of those schools still generate a lot of trips because we have high school students driving there, we have parents delivering their students there, and then you have, you know, the hospitals, a major employer, so obviously Utah State, major trip generator. And then you get into a lower level where you have maybe entertainment places, assisted living, grocery stores, and then another lower level, you know, parks, recreation trails, things of that nature. So we've gone through with the consultant, identified a lot of these trip generators in your communities, looked at your transportation plans, and then we've identified all of these corridors as potential corridors. But we ultimately want to end up with maybe 5-6 corridors that we really would say, this is where we invest from a city standpoint, this is where we invest from a transit standpoint. So the same day that we have board meeting, just before board meeting, we're having a stakeholder workshop over at the county administration building, so just across the street from 3 to 3:30, it's actually not 3, but 3:30 to 5, where we've invited all these stakeholders to come and really talk to us about those corridors. Have we missed anything? Now, we've already met with the CMPO Technical Advisory Committee. We've already met with our planning committee, as Leanna said. We've showed this to all the planners in the Valley. I meet with them once a month, and we've talked with them about it, and we're sharing this with you tonight. One of the other things that we're doing, and we just completed a survey that we're sending out to all the city planners and then asking them to share it with other stakeholders in their communities, that really go through each corridor, identify characteristics on that corridor, have them rank those So we're really getting a lot of input around this from the stakeholders themselves. And then what we're hoping to do is, like I said, narrow this down to a shorter number of corridors. And then we'll identify what's the mode that we're going to deliver. And again, the great thing about this is it can be flexible. So we might start out with express bus, but we're also going to identify that corridor that may also be the future BRT corridor. And so we're looking quite a ways out. You know, bus rapid transit, which is this bus you see here, that bus between UVU and BYU, that's probably a ways out for us. But this particular bus, there has down in that stretch, there's places where it runs with traffic, so it just runs on the road, shares the road with traffic, and then there's places where it gets into, it has a dedicated lane. So now all of a sudden transit becomes better than traffic, right? It's better to drive my car because I'm actually bypassing traffic, has signal prioritization, so now I can go past all those cars that are parked on the road, and then transit becomes a useful option for folks. And so these corridors are gonna be identified as not just what is our initial thing, but how do we transition that over time? And so, like I said, we're working on that to that end. So that's kind of where we're at in that process. Questions?
Are we considering any kind of rail-based transit in the future, like utilizing the transit?
So that's a question that I get fairly often, Jeannie. So. And Ron, you do this, jump in if you have feelings one way or another. But so a couple things with regards to rail. So rail is highly, highly expensive, right? So even at a streetcar level, we're talking millions of dollars a mile. And so for us to come and put this in our community, I don't see, at least in my time as your general manager, that we're going to have the population density, the trip generation density, that it would make sense for us to do that. Some folks have talked about the 6 West Rail, and again, that would have to have a significant upgrade. It's right now, I think, rated for about 25 or 30 miles an hour speed. And it's kind of off the corridor. I mean, so one of the things that's really helped me to understand this is in Las Vegas. So you have the Double Deuce, I think it's called, that runs the Las Vegas Strip. And Ron runs this service, I think. So Ron, if I'm way off, tell me. But so it runs the Strip. That's used way more than the monorail, which is what, a block off or 2 blocks off the Strip? Because it's just more convenient for people. And so you can get a 1-2 blocks off of a corridor and be okay, but you start getting more than that, people, they just won't use it. So, at least from my standpoint of what I see when I talk to industry leaders, I just don't see rail in our future long term. But again, we're always analyzing those things. I mean, that's part of this.
And bus rapid transit is, I mean, if you wanted to build a dedicated corridor, it's much cheaper. And it's, I mean, you could build a dedicated lane and it'd be the same as a rail.
Yeah. But great question. Great question. And we hear that question, so that's good that you're asking that as well. Other questions? Mary?
Would you like to have the board members show up to the workshop?
I would love for you to show up to the workshop. I think it's always good when you, as a board, can show up and work with elected officials and talk to elected officials and hear their questions, answer their questions, and so, or other stakeholders. I think it would be great. Love to have you there. Other questions? Okay, thanks.
Hang on there. Why don't you just stand there?
Oh, I gotta have notes. Do I don't know if I have any notes. I can go back up there.
Thank you. Todd, we'd like to turn some time over to you for the FTA debrief.
So, if you remember, we applied for that grant again for the facility. And we did this the last time when we got money. Every time after a grant application closes and the awards are made, they give us an opportunity to, if we want to voluntarily sign up for a debrief. And so we did that again with this one. Just I wanted to share a couple things with you. One, though, I was very impressed with how candid they were and also how much they knew about our project. I mean, it tells me that the process they went through, that they really did vet these things. So. And Curtis and Sharice can help me. There's 6 or 8 areas. I can't remember. think six. There's either
six
areas that they specifically look at and give us a rating. And in all six areas, our rating was highly recommended. And he spent time going through all the detail of that. But the person that was doing our review with our debrief with us, he said, "So you're going to ask me, well, why didn't we get funded if in every category we were highly recommended?" I'm like,
which
yeah.
is the highest that you can get?
Highly recommended is the highest that you can get. So he shared some figures with us. I just thought I would share with folks. So there were 530 applications. Again, this is a nationwide competitive grant process. There were 530 applications. 460, so 87% of those applications received highly recommended in every category, just like we did. There were 150 applications that got funded. He gave us a couple reasons we didn't get funded, and like if you remember, those of you specifically on the policy committee, when you do the monitoring report review, we showed once that the Utah Local Government Trust does a safety audit every year, and one year they dinged us because we didn't have the latch on the paper cutter latched when they came, right? And pretty minimal finding. That's kind of how we felt here is. We specifically did not mention that building this building, the employees, the contracting employees building the building, would have the ability if they wanted to have access to a union. So because we didn't mention that, we got downgraded. We also got downgraded because, candidly speaking, we don't have enough minorities in our community. And so there's a criteria that they're looking at about helping minorities, and we just don't have enough, and so we got downgraded. So these are really small things, but when you have this kind of competitiveness, they have to look at those things too. And so essentially, what I came away with was, we know how to put together a good application, but we could do a little better on really making sure those things change with each administration, and making sure that we do our best to highlight those things. Some things we may not be able to achieve, or it may cost us too much, or it may not be in harmony with where we're going as an entity to achieve those things. And we just will have that discussion and say, yeah, should we do this or should we not? And then to Patrick's point that he's challenged us with is looking for other funding sources, which again, we're going to the state particularly now on this facility, but looking at other grant funding sources, I think that's something that we can definitely continue to do and improve on. But just wanted to report on that so that you understood why we did not get funded on that application.
Were they very specific? My wife's on this school board and went through all this. When she started 20 years ago, there were 3% minorities in the district. We're now at 48%. Is that not enough?
They have this whole formula. They have a tool that we use. We qualified with that, using their tools and their things, under the lower income levels, but not for some of these other things. And minorities, one thing he specifically said, it's just a focus. And there are other communities that have a lot higher percentage. So.
They used the term historically disadvantaged, and some of that they look at how programs that are available to the in those different areas, and it was really interesting as they identified their historically disadvantaged areas. It was the swampland in Benson. They mapped this tool out, and there was a tiny portion that came up and picked up right around the airport, but it was so on the fringe that we were trying to show how we did do service out into those areas, but it was almost impossible based off of what they described as in our area as historically disadvantaged. It was just tough to come.
Again, every administration is going to have a different focus, and so that's part of what this came down to. We just didn't hit the focus for this. And I shared this before, but when I went through and looked at the awards about 80%, 85% went to electric vehicles. That was a push of this administration. And if we would have gone after electric vehicles, we probably would have been awarded. But we're just not there for several reasons, right? But we are looking at that and looking at how and when can we get there. But that was just a focus of this administration. Great question.
Okay, Todd.
Thank you, Todd. Okay, now we're down to board chair report. Just like to recognize a couple of employees. Brad, behind the scenes of the camera and the computers, thank you for all you do. He's been with us for 3 years. We appreciate your service. There's Jody. He is our operations director, and he's been with us for 27 years. So. We appreciate you and all of our team for your service to the Cache Valley Transit District. You're making a huge difference. Are there any other comments from the board tonight, things we had to discuss? No? Any public comments? Doesn't seem that there's any public tonight. On that note, I think we'll adjourn. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.